All right, guys, let's talk about some awards here. And we'll go around David, Pete, and then myself on this one. Best male performance. Who's your choice for best male performance?
I have to go. I talked about it earlier. I have to go with Kieran Culkin in A Real Pain. Just incredible work. He's always been great, but I did not know he was capable of this much. And I think that this is a performance that every time, I mean, he's in the whole movie, like beginning to end. And every time he's on screen, I'm just kind of like, oh no, here it comes again. I'm going to start crying again, you know? But he's so damn good.
I almost put David Johnson from Alien Romulus, who plays the droid.
Yeah.
But Adrian Brody knocked him off my list last night. He's amazing in The Brutalist. Like, shocking. I cried multiple times just at his reactions. So he's so good.
He's great.
Great choice. You know, best male performance, if I'm being honest, it's got to be Hugh Grant for me from Heretic.
Cool.
Nice. Coleman Domingo was great. Richard Roundtree was great. One that we didn't talk about, but I wanted to shine some light on, is Denzel Washington's performance in Gladiator 2. I think if they would have focused on his character instead of just redoing Gladiator with a far less charismatic actor. I mean, Paul Mescal is a great actor, but he's just not Russell Crowe. I think if they would have focused on Denzel's character, we could have struck gold with that movie. But
interesting.
Yeah. I thought he was great.
He's fun.
All right. Best female performance this year.
So I wanted to go with Naomi Scott from Smile 2, just because I know she won't get as much notice, and she's just so freaking good in that movie. But it's Demi Moore in The Substance. I mean, I don't know how anyone could not go for that. And I mean, it's like the number one thing I'm hoping for out of award season is that she just wins everything she gets nominated for. She's just so damn good and fearless. And, you know, what a great role to get at this stage in her career.
Great pick. That was almost my pick. I went with Nell Tiger Free from First Omen.
Nice.
Yeah. Subtle in scenes and way over the top in others, but never to the point of parody. That was great homage to Possession in that one scene outside the taxi. And she's phenomenal. Never heard of her before, and I can't wait to see what she's in next.
For mine, it's got to be Kathy O'Brien from Love Lies Bleeding. I thought she was so good in that role. I do think Demi Moore was amazing. I think that she deserves a Best Actress Oscar, and it would be amazing to see her win for this. Holy shit, that would be great. But also Margaret Qualley, like, oh wow, she brought it in that too. She was in one of the worst movies I saw this year, Driveway Dolls.
Oh yeah.
And
it was fun, but it wasn't great.
I hated that movie. I hated it. And I had high expectations for it. But when I saw her in this, and I know this is exactly like playing into what that movie is telling us. It's like, oh, Demi Moore's awesome, but Margaret Qualley, you know, it's like exactly what the movie's trying to shit on me for, but I couldn't help it. She was so great in this too. All right. This next category is one that we didn't do last year, but I want to start doing it from now on. 2024's breakout star. So this is somebody that you saw this year and you're going to be paying attention to them from now on. It can be an actor, it can be a writer, it can be a director, whatever. Who is your 2024 breakout star, David Rosen?
So I went with the writer-director for mine, and maybe a little bit of a deep cut, but it's Christy Hall, the writer-director of Daddy-O.
Hmm.
This is a small little movie with Dakota Johnson and Sean Penn in a taxi cab, and literally the entire movie is just in the taxi cab. It's just these two people having this really deep conversation. The script is absolutely perfect, and she directs them so well with like such a clear vision of what this movie needs to be. And if you look at like how she made this movie, I mean, for this to be a directorial debut is insane, because the effects, this was mostly shot on a soundstage and it looks so seamless, like it's actually two people in a car riding around New York City. But her command of the effects work and like all of the different craftspeople that need to be able to pull something like this off and make it look seamless is just wild. And I hope, I know most people probably didn't even see this movie, but I hope that she gets another chance to do something maybe a little bit bigger next time out. But yeah, I loved this movie. And yeah, everything that she has to command as a director, I think she does perfectly.
I've never even heard of this movie, but I need to check it out.
Yeah, it's on my missed on movies I need to watch list. I was going to choose Kaylee Spaney for my breakout star just because she had hell of a year. But I don't think that any of her performances blew me away in a way that I was blown away by J.T. Molnar's Strange Darling. Hmm. Ritter director.
Fuck, I forgot this could have been on my top 10.
That was the 10 that got bumped for Better Man. So
yeah. That was another movie that I had to seek out in Sacramento to find. And also In a Violent Nature was one single showing in one theater in Sacramento. It was like, I'm so glad I seeked them all out. But Strange Darling was like hyped up by Kyle Gallner on social media. And I love him. And he said, oh, no, just go watch it. Trust me. Go watch it. I'm in it. But I'm not even the best part in it. There's so much cool stuff about it. And it's like taking a gimmick like Giovanni Ribisi being the DP is like, that seems like a gimmick. But J.T. Molnar trusted him because he was confident in him. Putting the shot in 35mm at the front seems like a gimmick. But it prepared you for what you're going to get. And it was just great. Really great start to finish. So I can't wait to see what he does.
Yeah.
Man. This is why I need to really be better at updating my letterbox. I didn't put this on my letterbox, and I completely forgot about this movie when I was building my list. I loved it. Certainly would have been in my top 10. All right, my 2024 breakout star is a guy from a movie that I'm doubting a lot of people have seen. It's a movie called Life After Fighting, and is the writer, director, actor Bren Foster, who, if you're into direct-to-video action movies, like Scott Adkins is kind of the king of those currently. Bren Foster is about to take that mantle. It's a very simple story about this guy who's protecting his martial arts studio from sex traffickers. But the second half of this is all fight scenes. And it's all just kind of a showcase for Bren Foster. And he is awesome. There are some really great fights in here. And really well-directed stuff. How he did this on a very limited budget, probably using a studio that he trained at or owns, was really something. So if you're into direct-to-video action movies or just action movies in general, check out Life After Fighting and see what Bren Foster is capable of, because there are some hard-hitting action scenes in this.
Writer, director, star. Wow. That's unusual for an action movie.
Yeah, for sure. I hadn't even heard of it, but I just added it to my watch list.
Yeah, let me know what you think after you see it. All right, this next category is the movie that they didn't get. So this is a movie that you thought was awesome, but critics did not like it. Mr. Rosen, what do you got on movie they didn't get?
This is a movie that I've loved all year long and everybody else thought was terrible, but it's called Miller's Girl. It stars Jenna Ortega and Martin Freeman. It, granted, was sold as a sexy thriller, and that's what people took it as a very bad sexy thriller. But if you watch this movie, I really don't understand how you could not come away thinking that, how you could come away thinking that that's what it is and not a comedy sexy thriller, because this is one of the funniest movies that I've seen this year. It is a movie that I'm sure knows exactly what it's trying to do, which is kind of comment on the fact that we can't have sexy thrillers anymore. Like, they just don't work. Either we're in kind of, you know, Me Too territory and the kind of ickiness just doesn't work with audiences, or everything has just gotten so post-ironic that, like, we can't take things seriously. And this movie kind of plays into both of those kind of angles really, really well. Jenna Ortega is great as just playing it totally straight, but everyone around her is so ridiculous, and all of the situations are completely ridiculous, and this movie just feels so much like a satire. I laughed through the whole thing, and everybody else was like, that movie was just bad, and I think they're just completely missing the point.
What was it called again? Miller's Girl?
Miller's Girl, yeah.
All right.
Dave, I'm going to watch that for you. Because I love you.
Yeah.
But after you burned me with telling me how good Fool's Paradise was and how everybody misunderstood it.
Yeah.
We're either going into two for two, or we're going to be batting 50, because that was Fool's Paradise was rough.
Fool's Paradise is a genuine cult classic waiting to happen, even if I'm the only member of the club. But you know.
Well, one movie that we do agree on that the critics didn't get was Godzilla X Kong: The New Empire, because that movie was fantastic.
Hell yeah!
It's a Saturday morning cartoon come to life. It was everything that a 10-year-old Pete wanted in a movie. But even better, because I was 38 when I watched it. and me and Dave are like two sides of the same coin, because he's King Kong, Team Kong, and right here I got my Godzilla Minus One poster back there. Mm-hmm. I got multiple Godzilla art pieces in my house and figurines and stuff. I love Godzilla. And I'm one of the few that will defend the 2014 Gareth Edwards one. I think it's a 5-star movie. It brings the scope of Godzilla to a place that you've never seen before. And Gareth Edwards has proven to be good with that, with the creator. But Godzilla X Kong is like the opposite. It's just so, it's so cartoonish. It's so smash him up. It's like Rampage the video game, but with way better graphics. It knows exactly what it is. And Dan Stevens steals the show in a big way. It's so fun. I've watched it 3 times this year.
Wasn't Rampage the video game also adapted into a movie with The Rock?
A movie that I love, by
the way. It was, and we don't talk about that one because David goes David on a tangent.
It's so good. So good.
All right. My choice for the movie that they didn't get is rated 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, but I thought it was a really good movie. It is Spaceman, starring Adam Sandler.
Yes!
Yeah, I thought Spaceman was terrific. It stars Adam Sandler as this lonely spaceman. He's like 6 months into a mission, and he's joined by a creature voiced by Paul Dano named Hanus. And it's a slow movie, and it is very contemplative. But if you're in the right mindset when you watch it, I think it struck a chord with me for sure. I know a lot of listeners did not appreciate Spaceman, but I did. I like Adam Sandler in more serious roles.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right, now the flip side of that coin, the movie that you didn't get. So this is a movie that was highly rated, highly regarded by critics, but one that you didn't like.
So I didn't plan it this way, but it also is another sexy movie like Miller's Girl. But it is Baby Girl, a movie that my wife and I opted to see on Christmas Day instead of Nosferatu. And then as we drove home from the theater, we're like, what the hell was that? Like, this movie is supposed to be just this, like, this sexy kind of, like, you know, pro-feminism, like, you know, girl boss kind of movie. And it's about this piece of shit, basically, who destroys her family. And, like, it's a pro-kink movie, but at the same time, she clearly thinks there's something wrong with her for wanting what she wants. And I just don't think any of it works whatsoever. I do think Nicole Kidman is still great. I mean, she's always great. You know, there's no one's taking that away. But I don't think this movie story-wise works at all. I think I'm left just simply not liking this person, and kind of it makes it really difficult to, like, really get behind what this movie is trying to explore. And a lot of people just kind of immediately, because it was this pro sex, pro kink kind of thing, like, we're just like, you know, yeah, you go, girl. But it's like, it wasn't good. So it's like, I don't know, it's a tough one.
Good pick. My movie that the critics seem to love, and it's a mixed bag, but it just won at the Golden Globes big, is Amelia Perez.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm going to catch flack for this, because it's like this very, like, you know, open pro-trans, you know, movie or whatever. It's like, listen, I'm all for equality. I love LGBT community. I'm pro-trans rights and trans wrongs. This is a bad movie. Mm-hmm. It's not good. The songs suck. The acting is bad. It's like they're trying to make a modern opera with people who don't know how to sing. Every time I thought that the movie was like, okay, this is getting a little bit better, another song starts. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. I got to endure this again. So not on top of that as well, they're trying to portray the main character, the title character, as a sympathetic person who you're given, the first time you meet this person, you're told that they're a horrific killer who have killed and mutilated and kidnapped many people because they're a drug cartel boss in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not just a random thug. It's the cartel boss that everybody looks up to as the most heinous person of all time. And then after they transition, they're all of a sudden a folk hero. And it's like, what the fuck? What's the message here? Am I being pranked by all these people that say this movie's great? Because that's what it feels like. So I watched it with Joseph so that we could talk about it on the show, which will be this Saturday. And I really hope I don't get canceled for it because it's just not a good movie.
I'm looking forward to hearing your discussion about that. Boy.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. The first thing I thought when I watched this movie is like, you know, like you said, you know, every, you know, all power to, you know, all people. But like, I would be offended by this movie if I was trans. Like, seriously.
I would think I would be too. Yeah. I don't know because I'm not, but I've heard friends, very close friends in the LGBT community that are praising it. And then others also in the community that say it's terrible. And friends of Mexican lineage that were born in Mexico in some very rough areas that are like, this is the worst. It portrays gay people wrong and Mexican people wrong from a French guy who's neither.
Right.
Friend of the show, Billy Ray Bruton, said this is one of the worst movies he's ever seen. I have not seen it. My wife actually started watching this. My wife's Mexican. She started watching this and bailed 20 minutes in. She was like, this is absolutely awful.
She made the right choice.
Yeah, I wish I would have bailed. I have a duty, though.
Well, hopefully it will lead to some interesting discussion for you and Joseph this weekend. The movie I didn't get, this could have been two different foreign films on here. I thought about putting Red Rooms on here because a lot of people love that. It did not connect with me. But the one that I hated that is 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, everybody seems to love it, was the Spanish movie The Coffee Table. Either one of you guys seen The Coffee Table?
No.
You know, it's supposed to be a dark comedy. It's getting so much praise. I can't understand it. It's, for a long time, it was the worst movie that I saw all year. It's about a couple, and they have a newborn baby, and they're kind of getting the apartment ready, and he she's in charge of everything, but he is like, I want to pick the coffee table. And so he finally chooses this coffee table. And then there's something that happens regarding that coffee table that kind of lingers through that house as there's a dinner party going on. I absolutely hated this movie. And it's not that I didn't have the stomach for it. It's just that I didn't think it was good. I didn't think it was well done. So yeah, The Coffee Table. If you guys check it out, again, I'm in the minority here. So if you check it out and you like it, let me know what you liked about it. But it just didn't connect for me.
It's on my list. And it's funny, what the people that recommended me to watch this also said that in the same sentence, I want to see what your take is on The Coffee Table and Red Rooms.
Red Rooms I liked. I didn't love it, but I did like it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people had that on some people had that on the top of their list. I think Dave Chen over at the Filmcast had that as his number one film.
Yeah.
Just didn't connect with me. All right, best piece of non-movie entertainment. So this could be a TV show, a video game, music, a book, whatever.
Well, my favorite band of all time is The Cure, and it took them 16 years to make a new album, and they finally made a new album, Songs of a Lost World, and literal tears rolling down my eyes listening to this for the first time. It's so good. It is. It's everything I could have dreamed it would be. They literally 50 years in, or 50 years is going to be, I think they said 2029. So almost to 50 years, made one of their best albums. It's insane. End Song, which is the final track on the album, is one of the best songs I've ever heard in my life. And it's just amazing that we finally have a new Cure album.
My best piece of non-movie entertainment that came out this year, and I'm assuming this is for new stuff, so I'm not going to talk about Minecraft because I just discovered Minecraft as a game and it took over my life. I'm like losing sleep over it. But last year, my favorite like non-movie content that I consumed was Blue Eye Samurai, the Netflix animated series, like short form series. And this is also a Amazon Prime animated series that came to its conclusion with Arcane, which is the League of Legends animation series. And never played the game, don't know anything about it. By and large, I've heard it's a pit you don't want to get yourself into playing League. But the first season was phenomenal, and this is a culmination of that. They're not extending it. It's a done story, and it is so good with animation that is impressive and emotional, and characters from the first season that get almost no play and have an amazing story arc. This whole season one to season two, could be used for writing classes for how to really draw character arcs, because you love people in the beginning of the series that you despise at the finale by the second. And the progression feels so natural and real. And a number of times throughout the series, I'm looking at Brianna and I'm like, oh my God, they didn't do that to this character. No. So it's season two. It's on Amazon Prime. Arcane. Go check it out.
I've heard really good things about that. Is that Prime or is that Netflix? I thought it was Netflix for some reason.
Maybe I'm wrong. Huh? I'll look it up real quick.
While you're looking that up, as you were starting to describe it, I just felt like I was aging like 30 years trying to understand what exactly you were talking about. League of Legends, Arcane, adaptation, the game.
You're right. It is Netflix. I was incorrect.
Best piece of non-movie entertainment. There was a lot of stuff I considered for this. I considered the Day of the Jackal show on Peacock. I thought that was great. I considered Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, the video game, which is really good. But ultimately, I went with a book called Nuclear War, A Scenario, which has been optioned to be adapted by Denis Villeneuve. So we're going to get a movie out of this.
Cool.
And it's a really strong, it's by Annie Jacobson. It's a really great book that details minute by minute what would happen if North Korea launched a nuclear weapon at the United States.
Whoa.
And it's pretty intense. Like, it goes through what nuclear war would look like, and it kind of is, it's crazy that there's literally nothing that can happen outside of the whole world being destroyed if somebody launches a nuke at this point. Mm-hmm. All human progress for the last couple hundred years would just be basically erased off the face of the earth in less than an hour. But really, really fantastic book. Highly recommended.
What's it called again?
It's called Nuclear War, A Scenario, and the author is Annie Jacobson.
Great.
Favorite non-2024 movie that you discovered this year?
I am going with Crime Wave from 1985, the Sam Raimi film that he made in between The Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. I'm going to be talking about this on Piecing It Together very soon, but I'll just say briefly that the reason I never watched this is because everybody says it's really, really bad, and like this just like only, you know, check it out if you're really just curious or whatever. It's freaking amazing. It is just, it's actually a lot like Hundreds of Beavers. It is just a total live action cartoon that is so divorced from any kind of reality. And the set pieces are just absolutely wild. It's got that Sam Raimi just kind of inventiveness and just doing every kind of camera trick and all kinds of weird stuff. Bruce Campbell is a total asshole in it. And yeah, it is so much fun. And I just don't understand how people didn't like this like over the last 40 years or whatever since it came out, and by the way, written by the Coen brothers, and yet it's still this movie that nobody ever bothers to mention.
All right, Crime Wave. Nice.
My favorite new movie of the year was something that I got directly from Jason. Actually, I bought it from him. It was a Shaw Brothers box set. And there was like four different DVD cases, and they had like four or five movies in each one of them. And that the best of the bunch, I watched them all last year, was Heroes of the East from 1978. It's so cool, and it's Gordon Liu's in it. He plays Pai Mei in Kill Bill Volume 2. He plays the leader of the Crazy 88 in Kill Bill Volume 1. And it's just as much of a, albeit biased, history lesson on Chinese versus Japanese weaponry and fighting styles, as it is a fantastic exhibition of both of those things. So it's my favorite of the Shaw Brothers films so far. Gordon Liu's great in Challenge of the Masters and Dirty Ho, two very different movies, but he really 100% leveled up for this. So it's really fantastic.
I'm glad you like the movies on those sets, man. That's a banger for sure.
Yeah, that's a good one.
My favorite non-2024 movie I discovered last year is a movie called The Witch, Part 1, The Subversion. And it has a second movie, The Witch, Part 2, The Other One, but I'm going to focus on the first one here. It's a Korean movie. And let me just describe it as John Wick plus Chronicle plus Stranger Things in Korean. It's amazing. It's so well done. It's about a girl who escapes from this government facility that she was born in, and she ends up on a farm, and she is basically hiding out at this farm. She's raised by this farmer, and then her family's running low on money, so she does this TV, like a game show, to try and get some money for her family, and then the government sees her on that show and comes to get her back, and it is real fun when her powers start showing up. Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend The Witch Part 1, The Subversion, and The Witch Part 2, the other one.
I've heard those are great. I gotta watch them sometime.
They're really, really fun. Let's close out 2024 here with a downer note. We're going to bring it back up because we're going to talk about what we're excited about for 2025, but we got to talk about the worst film that we saw in 2024. David, you see a lot of movies in theaters. What's the worst one that you saw in 2024?
So I just want to preface it by saying I don't like doing worst of lists or anything like that. You know, there's
me
always
neither.
You know, lots of people work on these things, blah, 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 blah. The worst movie I saw in the theater this year was Borderlands. It is just insane that this cost like $120 million. I just don't know what they were doing. Just an absolute mess of a movie from beginning to end.
They can make 12 Brutalists for that.
Yeah.
mine is, I saw a lot of really independent movies that by and large are objectively worse than my worst favorite movie, because this one has corporate sponsorship and big name people, and is directed by a comedic legend and written and starring a comedic legend. It's Unfrosted. Ugh. Unfunny. Painfully unfunny. Painfully unfunny.
Oh, boy. I went to go see Seinfeld and Jim Gaffigan in the city not too long before this released, and it was like basically an ad for Unfrosted.
Oh, boy.
And, oh, no. Yes. Not good. The worst film I saw in 2024, this is an easy one when I was coming up with this list, is The Crow, the remake of The Crow. I was so excited to see The Crow. And, you know, I go into movies sight unseen. I don't see anything beforehand. I didn't look up anything in it beforehand. And I remember I texted my wife about 30 minutes in, and I was like, I just looked at the Rotten Tomatoes score, and it's 5%. And maybe I should start looking at what critics think beforehand, but holy shit, what a mess The Crow was. It's just a terrible movie.
That's a shame.
Yeah. All right, let's end this on a bright note. There's a lot of really cool looking movies coming out in 2025. What are you most excited to see this year?
So I'll say just briefly that on my piecing it together most anticipated list, I put Mortal Kombat 2 because I'm an idiot. But I'm going to change that because I didn't know about this movie when I made that episode. And now it is my new most anticipated of 2025. It's A Working Man, the new David Ayer, Jason Statham movie following up last year's The Beekeeper, which was fantastic. This is going to be just awesome.
Can't wait for that.
Hell yeah.
Jason Statham playing every Jason Statham role, but I'm here for it because they're like comfort movies for me.
It's amazing how the trailers, like, you could probably like lay them on top of each other and it's like beat for beat the same thing. It's it's gonna be so great.
That's so funny. Mine's a tie because I couldn't pick between these two, and they're both so different. One is Presence, the Soderbergh movie, like a horror movie shot from the perspective of the ghost. So cool. I love that idea. And then Mickey 17. Bong Joon-ho, Robert Pattinson collaboration. Just bonkers by all means. I watched the trailer before The Brutalist, and I ate it right up. And I don't really watch trailers, so it was a delight.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah, I can't either. You know, I struggled with this one. Well, I guess I'll say I didn't really struggle with it, but there's a lot of great movies coming out. There's a lot of great movies. I considered P.T. Anderson's upcoming movie to put in this spot, but...
Delayed.
Oh, is it? It's not coming out this year?
I don't think it's coming out this year, no.
Yeah, just I think like a week ago they announced it. Yeah.
Well, it's just got way easier then.
Yeah.
We got a new Mission Impossible coming out this movie.
Oh,
Final Reckoning.
Yeah. The Final Reckoning.
Tom Cruise is my favorite movie star of all time, and this series is my favorite series of all time. And a lot of people were let down by Dead Reckoning Part 1. I was not let down. I thought it was, you know, middle of the road for a Mission Impossible movie, but Final Reckoning, I cannot wait. As soon as those tickets go on sale for the Metreon IMAX, they will be purchased. Oh, yes. They will be purchased.
Oh, yeah.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for hanging out with me. This is obviously a show that goes longer than normal because we do these superlatives, but honestly, I had a great time having you both on. We talked about some killer movies. I know I got stuff for my watch list and stuff that I can't believe I didn't see it. Strange Darlings, I can't believe I didn't mention it, but I'm glad it was mentioned at some point. Thanks so much for coming on. Make sure to check everything in the show notes. Go see, go listen to everything David Rosen and Pete Abeda. Their podcasts are wonderful. Listen to the cinematics. Greg, we wish everything's okay with you, your family, and everybody that you love down there, and everybody in LA, because those fires are terrible.
Yeah.
But gentlemen, thanks again for coming on, and can't wait to have you both. I'm sure you'll both be on this year at some point again.
Awesome.
It's a pleasure and an honor. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
What did we leave off that should have been on our lists? Let me know by emailing me at force5podcast@gmail.com. You'll find links to support guests and Force 5 in the show notes. Two very easy and very free ways to support me are to review Force 5 wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends about the show. The Force 5 theme song comes courtesy of Nate Spears. Outro music comes from Cheesecake Chad. And the top 5 list bumper was produced by me with music from Audio Binger. You only get one life. Spend it with the people and the movies that you love. Yo, check it. I'm on a mic just to let you know about the Force 5 getting that radio show. Talking movies, dropping knowledge, they the pros. They break it down like Kurosawa. Turn the score, say it won't. From blockbuster indie hits, they got it all. Analyzing films, they never... Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select...